Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to everyone in an effort to help them awaken to universal truth. If you want to learn about spirituality, the occult, and all things related to metaphysics, you are in the right place. All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Dina. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. Today, we have a wonderful guest joining us, and her name is Carrie Severson. Carrie is a professional writer and the author of Unapologetically Enough, Reshaping Success and Self-Love. Her written work has appeared in Redbook, SheKnows.com, and Huffington Post, just to name a few. She is also the CEO of the Unapologetic Voice House, which is a hybrid book publishing business. She wrote Unapologetically Enough about her journey of self-discovery. She started the Unapologetic Voice House in 2019 after spending years pitching literary agents in the hopes of being published traditionally. However, literary agents passed on her because she didn't have a big enough platform. Carrie essentially used that to pivot in life and launched her own business. And she is here with us today. Hi, Carrie. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you. I appreciate it.
So let's talk about your book. There's really a lot of ground to cover here. So in Unapologetically Enough, you touch on issues that many people, but really women, struggle with throughout their lives. You know, these challenges of being thin enough, young enough, successful enough, even wealthy enough, and even fertile enough, you know, throughout the course of your life so far. And I think many women's beliefs about their sense of self-worth are predicated on being enough in those areas of life. So can you talk to us just a little bit about this and what it means, you know, to be enough and even accept yourself as enough?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel like it's been a question, a quest, a topic. As long as I know I've been alive, I think my mom's generation had it too, probably before then. I think it's something that as women, it was sort of like, I think it's an old programming thing that's just been passed down from generation to generation. Questioning my enoughness started as a kid because I've been 5'9" since I was 10 years old. I was the biggest kid in school. I have curves and I didn't look like anyone else. Even on television, or in magazines, I grew up in the 80s. So the supermodel age, I didn't have anyone I could really turn to as a role model. So it was constantly like, as a curvy girl, I was being compared to thin girls and always felt like I wasn't enough because I didn't look like them. An entrepreneur, when I first launched as an entrepreneur, I started in the nonprofit sector. And I was being compared to well-seasoned organizations, putting categories that were a little one-man shop, one-woman shop, put in the same category as like a multi-million dollar hospital. I always felt like I wasn't in the right space in the right time to be able to compete. And it's such a toxic mentality to live through, the idea that you have to compete against this figure or this idea of success in order to sort of fit that identity constantly kept me in the space of, I'm not being enough, I'm not doing enough, I'm not thin enough, I'm not wealthy enough, I'm not successful enough. It was this rat race that for me led to burnout. And I think burnout is the ultimate space of questioning your enoughness. And when I accepted that, it was actually my 35th birthday, and I'm highly intuitive. I'm very sensitive. I'm one of those people that I did it as a kid. I would like take on other people's stuff and not know it. I can protect myself now from, you know, energies and things, but that's been something I've had to really grow into. But on my 35th birthday, I woke up and the first thing I got flashed in front of my like third eye and felt deep down in my bones was the term burnout. And I never heard it before. This was about 8 years ago. And when I got those messages at a cellular level, I knew it was an important thing. Like my eyes just popped open and it was like God was speaking directly to me.
Yeah. So in your early 30s, you did create this nonprofit for girls. And, you know, when I was reading your book, I felt like it was such a huge risk to take because many people in lives take the very safe route, you know, and we do it because we want to feel like secure and protected. Mm-hmm. And you, from what I, you know, gathered from your book, you took your savings and you created this, you know, very successful nonprofit. But yes, as you were saying, it led you to this massive, you know, burnout and self-evaluation and really trying to, you know, manage dealing with burnout. And a lot of people, you know, are living through burnout all the time, every day.
Yeah.
And I feel like people want to prove that they are successful enough. And that's why they allow themselves to, you know, keep living the burnout life. So how did you address it? So it's like you got to that point where you're like, yes, I'm burned out. You know, you're getting these messages. Mm-hmm. How did you, I guess, yeah, address it?
Yeah. So the benefit, the biggest benefit of having, of running a nonprofit is that I had a board I could turn to. And I mean, the most successful things were happening at that moment. I was partnered with USA Network. They were coming to town to throw me a party on a rooftop with like hundreds of people because of the work I was doing. I was in Glamour magazine. I was talking to, the Ellen DeGeneres producers, like it was at the peak, and I felt flat. There was nothing. I couldn't connect to it anymore emotionally. I felt defeated, you know, like, and that's not the feeling or the emotion you want to identify when you're like, yeah, let's have a party on the rooftop. Come, let's bring the cameras. Like it was like the exact opposite. So I turned to my, I turned to my board. And I said, I can't do this anymore. I feel like I'm on fire. I need you to manage the emails, the demands, the programs that are running. I need a break. And so I bought I got a one-way ticket back to my childhood hometown in Wisconsin. And I let them manage the organization until I felt like I could breathe again. And that's really what it was. It was, I felt like I was suffocating, and that wasn't the intention. I didn't want to carry that energy with me moving forward. So I took a break. And my parents, I grew up in this smaller town outside Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And at the time, the like cell phone reception was not very strong. So you couldn't, my phone didn't ring inside their house. I had to like stand on the driveway if I wanted to make a phone call, and it was perfect because I could literally disconnect and just sort of heal. And I gave myself the time and the space to do that. It wasn't easy. It was, even like addressing burnout, recovering, figuring my way through that was like throwing spaghetti at a wall. I would wake up one morning and still feel highly anxious, and I would be like a fight to convince myself it was okay to take a break. It was okay to take a nap. It was okay to sit in the grass and watch the clouds roll by. Like I had to convince myself at first to not do, but to just be.
That's a really, it's a very difficult thing. I would say even for myself to just, you know, not be actively working on something, like trying to have that. I think for a lot of people too, feel like they need to accomplish something, you know, because again, I think it's tied to your sense of worth or value. And I think that's a very difficult lesson for many people to learn, including myself, to just be and exist and breathe.
And at first, like coming from the rat race cycle and working like, you know, 16-hour days to not, I was able to recognize it as a habit versus something for my greater good. You know, like it was my drug of choice at the time, working, and I needed to break it. So it was hard at first. And then a couple of days went by, about a week went by, maybe 2 weeks went by. And finally I woke up one morning and I was like, wow, I don't have the urge to pull out my hair because I'm not in my computer, or, you know, give myself a guilt trip because I'm doing this, even though I know it's what I need. And to move myself through burnout, what I decided to do was really look at how I got there. And as a writer, I always traveled with like journals. I always brought like one that was half done, one that was done, one that I was working on, because I never knew where anything was, you know? And so I basically had like three at the same time. So I took my journals out to the deck and I started looking through them. And I guess I was just looking for like, I was looking for answers. How did this happen? And I started to see, the same term show up, and the word enough was one of those words. At the time though, it was really associated with a negative connotation. It wasn't enough. I didn't have enough time. I didn't have enough help. You know, it was always in the state of lack. And there was a lot of healing that had happened there. I started playing with emotional flavors that were coming up as I was reading my journals and, you know, looking at the feeling of resentment and why that was there, the feeling of anger. And I just started climbing the emotional scale. And week by week, just really addressing things I was feeling. And as I was addressing them, they were clearing and I was able to breathe again and feel lighter again. And
then you do it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to stop you there because I did have a question for you about your journals. Mm-hmm. And in your book, you do give us like, you know, little peeks about what you're writing about. And I found it really interesting because I wasn't sure, and I would love for you to let us know, when you were, you know, doing your journaling, were you asking, you know, whether it's your belief in like a higher power? Were you asking yourself? Who were you asking like these questions to when you were hearing it? Was it just like an intuitive voice talking to you? Can you talk to us kind of, because I felt like what you were doing was accessing like your own intuition, but
yes.
How did you do this, and how did you believe what you were getting?
I know, I get that a lot actually. That is exactly what I did. I would start every morning with like a letter to God and always do it from a clear perspective. So I would meditate first, feel really good, you know, clear my energy. I believe in all those tools that you can access to be in a safe environment and really connect to your higher power. And I would have ongoing conversations and then I would wait for answers. And sometimes, you know, when you're playing with the universe and you're like, okay, if I'm supposed to, at least this is what I do all the time, it's kind of like a game for me. I'm like, all right, if I'm supposed to go out tonight, I'll find a penny. And then I see a penny and I'm like, okay, I guess that's my answer. I love that. I've done that ever since I was a kid. But yeah, my journals were always a space of connection for me, answering myself from my higher self or God. It was my safe space for intuition.
And you could definitely see that, yes, in your own journal entries. And I think my other question for you is, you were talking about like getting to the root of why you were feeling angry or held resentment and all of that. How can you journal in a way where you're not necessarily for lack of a better word, like drowning in like the negative emotions. Cause usually when people are writing about it, they're feeling it so intensely, right? Like yeah. How do you write in a way where you can kind of separate yourself and take like more of an observer maybe perspective and not get so, I don't know, caught up in the darker feelings, if you will.
So I was in that space for a long time and it was a downward spiral. Like, you know, I was really angry and that anger just always came out. So when I decided to accept burnout, take a break, and I really gave myself a legit break. I didn't write in my journals until I felt I was as neutral as I could be. And that space of neutrality for me was like, I didn't feel anxious. I could actually access peace for the first time in a long time. And from that space, I had enough clarity to, okay, now it's probably time to journal. And so when I was starting to dig in and heal, first I went through my journals and I highlighted words that I was using all the time to be like, okay, well, I need to reframe my language. And I was doing it from an analytical perspective. So I was in my head and I was trying to think my way through it, which can sometimes I think just be as dangerous as trying to feel your way through it. Because if you're not addressing the feelings, you're just like, you know, for me, I was just kind of shoving them down. But when I started to, something came to me where it was just like a light bulb went on where I decided to try to access different emotions and then assign like reason behind it. So it was like resentment. I feel resentful because blah, blah, blah. And then I would always flip it. What would happen if I wasn't resentful? I would feel this. And then I would go to the next, you know, it literally was addressing the feeling and then flipping in, which was something that, you know, a coach had taught me a long time ago. Love and or fear and faith are opposite sides of a coin. If you're not in faith, you're in fear. And so that's what I did. I just addressed one emotion and then flipped it to the very opposite.
Wow. It's a very good way of looking at it. And it's kind of funny that you're saying like, you know, there's two sides of the coin and it's really a matter of your own, I guess you could say, perspective.
Yeah.
You know, what you're choosing, how you're choosing to see things essentially. And I think that's, you know, it's difficult for a lot of people because something that you kind of mentioned is that you were in a state of lack. I think a lot of people, you know, feel like something is always lacking and that's why they're always chasing something.
Yeah. Where the concept of not being enough exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely all over the pages of my journal. And so for years after that, I actually avoided the term enough altogether because I associated it with lack. And then, you know, after I spent about a good 8 weeks really healing and I had the support of my board. So I didn't have to go back to work right away. I could take the break that I really needed and gain the clarity and gain some healing. And one of the things I decided to do was, you know, put up boundaries. I had always heard of it. People always told me to do it. I just never knew, you know, how do you do that? So I decided to create a list for myself of things that I knew made me happy. And for me at the time, happiness was something I craved. It was something I really wanted. It was something I missed. It was something I longed to bring back into my life. So I created a list of things I was bound and set to have, to do, to be. And some of those things were like, I was going to go to Zumba. I was going to go to dance class. I was going to paint again, or, you know, watch funny movies. And to do those things to make me feel joyful, I had to have the time. And so one of the first things I did was create boundaries around my calendar. I wouldn't accept calls before 10 a.m. or after 5 p.m. I wouldn't take calls on Friday or meetings on Friday. If I had to drive more than like 45 minutes, I asked for a phone call. And it was such a clear defining moment for me that like, it really upset a lot of people where they're like, hey, can you meet me at 9 a.m.? And I would say, no, I have a dance class. And they're like, you know, can't you skip it this month? And I'm like, nope.
That's amazing. I think I think that is, it's such a powerful thing to do, like you said, is set your boundaries and, you know, kind of harnessing the power of no.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like you did.
I did. And some of those practices I still use today. I don't take anything on Fridays. I still go to dance class at 9 a.m. I have an hour for lunch every day, whether I actually eat lunch or I take a nap or I scroll through TikTok or I snuggle with my dog. I don't care. It's just my break in the middle of the day to reset. But it was such a, an amazing opportunity for me to turn things around. And it provided me the most brilliant space. So the clarity that I gained in healing that burnout was pretty phenomenal because I was able to see that I was in the center of this nonprofit that I created. And then I would always come back to burnout unless I could get myself out of the center and be a spoke in the wheel versus the wheel and the spoke and the rubber and the middle. So I actually like reframed our business model and I created a B2B, started training facilitators around the country. And I partnered with Southwest Airlines at the time. They flew me around the country and I was able to train facilitators. And I would always go to parts of the country at times where I could take a couple of extra days, visit with some friends or family, and sort of wrap it up into this beautiful personal and professional week. And this one time I was in like the Orange County area and accidentally wound up at a party, sort of party crashed accidentally. And just walked into a bar that was throwing some big birthday bash and ended up meeting an editor for Huffington Post.
Mm.
And she was like, so what do you do? And I told her I was this nonprofit leader, but I'm actually recovering from burnout. And so I'm thinking of going back to my roots of storytelling. And I want to start writing again. And she's like, oh, Arianna Huffington just wrote a book about burnout. You should write something. I'll publish it for you.
Oh, wow. That
was like 2014. I wrote something, she published it. And the feedback I got from that piece was very telling because people, total strangers from all over the world, responded with, I feel the same way. This is totally me. I could have written this. Thank you for putting a name to it. This is exactly how I feel. And that was really the start of my next chapter where I was able to recognize I need to address this. I need to start writing about this. And unapologetically enough, really started from that article. And I start, you know, burnout is an issue that I think everyone faces at some point in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an evergreen topic. I don't think folks really know they're in it until they're at the bottom of it.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. And how to get out of it.
Which is super helpful to so many people because we strive, you know, to whether we're trying to prove it to someone else or prove to ourselves again the idea of being, you know, accomplished, being enough for others, like we will dig ourselves like a hole to the bottom and just you know, make ourselves sick even at times, you know, trying to become successful or at least attain a certain level of success that we, you know, the world thinks is great.
I know.
To a certain degree. So how, you know, just given your experiences then with, you know, everything that you have actually accomplished, you know, in your life, how do you define success now?
I find it as a daily, it's a day-to-day feeling for me. And I always go back to the term happy. If I feel happy, content, satisfied with myself that day, I'm successful, regardless of, you know, what I, how many hours I've worked, or the pace and this, you know, the speed that I've worked. If I feel happy with myself and my effort that day, I look at it as a successful day.
It's a very nice way of looking at it, because it feels like no pressure.
Yeah, it has to be, because I know burnout is, I mean, as an entrepreneur, it's so easy to slide back into it. It really is. Like, I get excited about, I love my work, I love what I do. It would be very easy for me to just open up my phone at 8 o'clock at night, 9 o'clock at night, and respond to emails or pitch somebody. And so I have to set parameters. And then if I choose to work late, then I know the next day is a me day. It's a mental health day. It's like a ease back day. Nowadays, I play with the masculine and feminine energy. I'm much more balanced in it. I know when to push myself and I know when to ease off. And so it is. There's days that I know I'm going to work harder, and that's going to be a successful day. And then there's days where I know that I'm not going to work at all, and I'm going to watch reruns of whatever, and that's going to be okay. Right.
The best days.
Right.
So I feel like, okay, there's a couple things. I was taking notes while you're speaking, because I feel like I have a lot to ask you. But first thing I wanted to ask, because your book is titled Unapologetically Enough, Reshaping Success and Self-Love. Mm-hmm. After everything that you've gone through, because we haven't even touched on everything, but you've gone through quite a bit. How do you define self-love at this point in your life?
For me, self-love is a state of being. And it's when I feel at peace with myself, I'm able to connect to the deeper parts of myself, the stillness within myself. And really, honestly, do that, be able to sort of like, I just exhaled and I smiled and then my head tilted. Like, that is a space of self-love for me. You know, I feel good about myself. That's something a state of being I strive for.
Which is a wonderful state of being. Again, no pressure, no need to try to fill in some void by actively doing something or proving something.
I did that for years. I think most women do. I call my 20s my like my bandwagon phase, where I knew in my 20s there was this thing missing. I felt this void. And I didn't know what it was. And so I tried to fill it with things, with people, with hobbies. I would jump from one bandwagon to the next. And it's actually how I found it's that phase of my life, though, was really how my spiritual awakening happened, my understanding of intuition and energy. I got into an equestrian phase, and so I was horseback riding. I got into a horseback riding accident.
Oh, no.
The physical therapist I found suggested I go to hot yoga before my PT so that she could actually help my body, because I was in so much pain. So I found myself sitting in this hot yoga room for the first time, and the woman next to me is like, "Are you here for a spiritual awakening?" And I was like, "I guess so, sure." So yeah. After yoga class, I got changed, showered off. I like questioned what my choices were. I was like, this 104 degrees for 90 minutes is insane. But yes. I went to Barnes and Noble and I asked the lady behind the information desk. I was like, where would I go to learn about spiritual awakenings? And it was so funny. She like leaned over and whispered, the new age section.
Yes.
I was like, okay. So I looked around, I found it. I sat down on the floor and I just like read book after book, dozens of books. But that's how that started for me, was my bandwagon phase of trying to figure out the void in life. And when I got to that intuition space, that spiritual space, I found a coach that could help me understand it. I was probably 28 when that started, and nothing's really been the same since.
So my question for you in relation to that, because yes, you've suffered through a lot of burnout, plus many other things that you discuss in your book. But if anyone were to look at, let's say, your personal CV, they would be very wowed by everything that you've accomplished, you know, in this life so far. So yes, your nonprofit was a major success. And now you've created the Unapologetic Voice House, which I think is actually very amazing. And this is kind of a side note, because I know how difficult it is to get published traditionally. So I think it's, you know, super, super brave to venture out and do these things. And, you know, something I alluded to kind of earlier, that most people would not take these types of risk unless they knew that they knew that they knew that they would be secure in some way, that they would be all right. How did your own personal spirituality or your spiritual views help you know that I'm going to do this and I'm going to be all right?
So, if you build it, they will come. If you leap, the net will appear, all of that jazz. But whenever, God has spoken to me in such a profound way where he literally wakes me up and then gives me a seed where I'm still in bed, my eyes are just open, I'm still in bed, I know to listen. And so, that has happened to me 3 times. It happened to me for the nonprofit. It happened to me with my husband, and it happened to me for the Unapologetic Voice House. And the way that took place was, I had just met my husband, and we were on stable ground. I woke up and I heard God say, "Be the house." And this was after years of pitching literary agents, years of being told, "I love the work. This reminds me of Eat, Pray, Love. It reminds me of Darren Greatly. It reminds me of Spirit Junkie, but you don't have Gabby Bernstein size following. You don't have Brene Brown size following. I can't pick this up." I heard that so many times.
Wow.
So I wake up, I hear "Be the house." And I say that I did like a kip out of bed. It was like flat, horizontal to like vertical in like a split second. And I was so, I was so mad. I was like, "F you, I'm not doing this." And I had like my finger pointed to the sky and I was like, "I'm not doing it." Thank God he was my boyfriend at the time. Thank God he wasn't around, because he thought I was crazy. But I avoided that message for about 9 months. And here's the thing about me and my intuition. It's so well developed that I couldn't get that message out of my head. And the nonprofit had been closed. I moved on to storytelling. I was a storytelling coach. I was helping people get published. And it was like clients started falling off. They were like, they're having their own troubles. They couldn't work with me anymore. Clients weren't coming in. And I did that for, I mean, it was weeks on end, weeks, months on end, nothing was coming in. And so finally I just sort of surrendered. I was like, "Fine, I will look into how to do this." And I did it smart. I took my time. I did all the research. I talked to a bunch of folks, and I decided to put like a landing page up and just put it out on Facebook. And within literally a matter of days, I had like 3 clients.
Wow. That's amazing.
And so when it works for me, when I do get those messages, it's not I think my lesson in life has always been to trust my intuition, to trust that relationship I formed. And when I go against it, or when I like doubt myself, negative things happen, lack comes in. And so my job is to honestly just stay in that space of trust and believing that I was given these tools for a reason. And it's a smart decision to keep moving forward.
Definitely. And I think it's a very powerful message in that, because most people don't live in, let's say, they don't live from their intuition. They don't let that guide them. You know, they second guess themselves. And like you said, when you kind of second guess, you end up having, you know, the experiences that you didn't want, as opposed to, you know, what spirit was telling you to do in the first place.
And that totally happens. There's times, and I mean, there's times as a business leader that I've said yes to partnerships that I knew I should have said no to, but something, I moved from a place of like fear or childhood wound or something, you know, caught me off guard. So I said yes. And those relationships have always failed. They've always blown up in my face. And so again, my biggest lesson has always been to trust.
Yes. Difficult for a lot of us to trust that lesson.
I still struggle with it.
I do too. I just want to know, just based off, you know, unapologetically enough, you know, what is the biggest takeaway, you know, for readers?
What I really hope they walk away with is examining their own definition of success, examining their own definition of self-love, and really coming to the space of understanding you are enough in both those elements in your life, and you get to make the decision of what those things mean to you versus allow society to dictate how you view yourself and believing you are anything but enough as you are right now.
If people want to connect with you, how can they find you and where are they going to find your book? When is it going to be released? I encourage everybody to read it. I read it so fast. I thought it was going to take me forever. And I was so engulfed in it. I was like, oh my gosh. And I really enjoyed your book wholeheartedly. So please, how can people connect with you and find your book?
Unapologeticallyenough.com is where I'm at. The book is available for pre-sale right now. And it drops May 24th, wherever you buy books.
Amazing, Carrie. Again, thank you so much for having this wonderful conversation with me today. I've learned quite a bit from it, and I thank you for, you know, you've given me your time.
Thank you so much.